This is Brian Cambria with this news for the KVNF listening area Friday, October 26th, 2012. We'll begin this morning with an update on wildfires. Yesterday, officials announced the evacuation has been lifted for all residences outside of the fire perimeter in the Wetmore Fire, but residences within the fire perimeter remained evacuated while firefighters assessed the safety concerns and the condition of infrastructure in the area. According to the Denver Post, the Wetmore Fire is approximately 65% contained and has burned 2,100 acres, including 14 homes in Custer County. All roads within the fire perimeter remain closed. A Type 2 Incident Command team is now in command of the fire, and the number of incident personnel is estimated at 240. The cause remains under investigation. And in Rocky Mountain National Park, the Fern Lake Fire was listed at 1,030 acres and 17% contained. The Colorado Office of Emergency Management said snow dampened that fire considerably Thursday. Closer to home, the Durango Herald reports that Montezuma County Sheriff's officials have arrested someone in connection with the 400-acre Roadcap Fire that prompted evacuations of 30 homes between Cortez and Dolores. That person, whose name authorities wouldn't release, was being held Thursday on suspicion of arson. Earlier reports that the blaze was sparked by a trash fire gone awry were inaccurate. The town of Paonia lost more to employee fraud than first reported. The fraud discovered during the 2011 audit is now totaled at more than $400,000 for 2010 and 2011. Previously, the figure for 2010 had been reported at around $225,000. The town's annual budget is around $2 million. Cindy Jones has been Paonia's finance officer since March. She says that the town has implemented a series of new practices to keep a much closer eye on town finances.
All transactions are reviewed by the finance committee, and a lot of them are also reviewed by the entire council. I have no signature ability, and I don't have any access to any of the funds by cash, by check, or otherwise. And all of the suggestions that were made in the audit have been followed and are either been completed and we are doing them, or they're in process of being done.
Jones says the fraud won't have an impact on town operations. The town has submitted a claim to its insurance company for a reimbursement, but Jones says she can't speak to the status of that at this time. Town Clerk Barb Peterson says that the matter is entirely out of the town's hands at this point. The case has been sent to the district attorney, and their investigation is continuing. The district attorney will decide what charges, if any, to bring against the town's former finance officer, Kristen Chesnick. The Delta County Independent reports that charges may be filed as early as next week. The Glenwood Springs Post-Independent reports last week SG Interests filed its first formal application for a permit to drill in the Thompson Divide area. The lease and proposed well site is located about a mile and a half southwest of Sunlight Mountain Resort. The site is just north of the Garfield-Pitkin county line. Robbie Gwynn, vice president for land at SG Interests, said if the well is approved by the state and federal agencies, the company expects to begin drilling as soon as possible. "And this is going to be the controversial part," said Gwynn. "Access will be through Glenwood Springs and up 4 Mile Road to 4 Mile Park and then off U.S. Forest Service Road 300, end quote. According to Gwynn, SG Interests ultimately plans to install 7 surface well pads for 9 wells on its 18 leases in the Thompson Divide area, which stretches from Sunlight south to Coal Basin west of Redstone. According to the Carbondale-based Thompson Divide Coalition, which is leading the fight to prevent gas drilling in the area, 4 Mile Park is used by ranchers to graze livestock and by recreationists for the hiking, biking, and skiing. Gwynne confirmed the new application for a permit to drill is for one well on one pad. More applications to drill will be filed, he said, quote, as soon as we can get them prepared, end quote. David Boyd, spokesman for the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, said the application currently is being reviewed for completeness both by BLM and White River National Forest officials. Once it is deemed to be a complete application, Boyd said, the two federal agencies will begin an environmental assessment, a process that he said could take a year or more. For more information on this story, check out today's Glenwood Springs Post-Independent. Ouray County Commission candidates have garnered big money in the run-up to the election. The Watch reports that incumbent Lynn Paget has raised more than leading Republican opponent Jack Flowers in the race for District 1 commissioner, but not much. The two candidates' most recent campaign finance statements show that Paget has raised over $15,600 in her campaign, compared to Flowers' $14,675. The Watch reports that Paget also leads Flowers in terms of numbers of individual donations through October 16th. The Watch further reports that these campaign contributions eclipse those in Ouray County's other commissioner race between Republican Don Batchelder and unaffiliated Pat Willits for District 3. Those two candidates have raised $1,600 and $5,000 in contributions, respectively. The Watch reports that both Flowers and Paget have spent roughly half of the funds raised, but in different ways. Paget has spent more on newspaper advertising and print mailings, and Flowers has spent more on political signs and radio ad spots. This month marked the end of an era, and it's unlikely many were even aware of it. The city of Delta tore down the old cannery building, in place since 1920, to make way for a new bypass route for Highway 50. KVNF's Marty Derlin reports.
Fruit first put Delta County on the map at the 1893 Chicago World's Fair, winning 30 out of 40 first prizes. That led to a high demand for Delta County fruit across Colorado and even beyond. Jim Wetzel has been steeped in local history since he became the director of the Delta Historical Museum 15 years ago. He takes pleasure in telling stories about the county's early ventures into canning.
Farmers needed a place to process their fruit. Most of it they sent to market, but there was the later fruit, the softer peaches or whatever, that they had no market for. And so they just sat on the ground and rotted, until there was a canning factory.
The first cannery was built in 1895 by Frank Sanders, whom Wetzel refers to as Delta's first millionaire. A partner in the Batchelder Mine, Sanders invested a great deal into the community and was responsible for several buildings in Delta, including the bank and the two-story cannery in North Delta. The first cans were handmade at a tin shop. Wetzel is still awed by some of the early technology used.
They had a sauerkraut machine, for example, that shredded 2,000 pounds of cabbage in 10 minutes. I've looked at that statistic and thought, well, how did they get power to it? Because there was no electricity in Delta at that time. So it was either by a gas-driven motor or something of that sort. Perhaps water power, because they were near canals.
The first factory fell victim to ownership disputes and the economy, and the building disappeared long ago. But the need to preserve local fruits and vegetables remained, so a consortium of businessmen put together a new factory, which opened in 1920.
The canning factory, where the processing took place, was a building that had over 200 windows, if you can imagine that. A lot of glass, a lot of light apparently came in there, so they didn't use electricity for lighting so much as they did for the equipment. That first year in 1920, they processed over 690,000 cans of food. Most of that food went to the western slope towns. A lot went, of course, in other areas in Colorado, probably Front Range.
Wetzel says the construction of the railroad helped farmers get their product to market or to the cannery more easily, without having to go all the way to Delta.
They would simply meet the train, you know, in Paonia or Payne Siding, right there at Redlands Mesa. That's where they would load the fruit on the train.
During the Second World War, the cannery operated at maximum capacity, preparing food for army bases around the country. Wetzel says the cannery helped soldiers in another way, too.
Soldiers were writing back home that things that were being shipped to them were arriving wet with salt water. So the canning factory provided tin cans to the local citizens, who then could pack either food or toothpaste or whatever it was they wanted to ship, and then they would take that can to the canning factory, who would put a lid on it, waterproof, and then they would be able to ship it in that manner, and that solved that problem.
The canning factory employed anywhere from 30 to 300 people in its working days, using the Town Talk and Kuhner Empson labels. It closed in 1964, victim of the same economic problems as the earlier cannery. For a while it was used for onion storage, but in recent years the building sat empty at the south end of Delta. The old cannery was recently torn down to make way for a new bypass for Highway 50. Now, a heap of enormous cement chunks is all that remains. A former storage building still stands, roofless and surrounded by weeds, by the railroad tracks. For KVNF News, I'm Marty Derlin.
And now for the latest edition of Western Slope Skies, a joint production of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society and KVNF.
During these late October evenings, a bright moon rises in the east as sunlight and twilight fade. The full moon that occurs nearest the first day of fall is known as the harvest moon. The next full moon after that is known as the hunter's moon. This year, there's a hunter's moon on October 29th. A full moon always rises right around sunset, and in general, the moon rises about 50 minutes later each night due to its easterly orbital motion around the Earth. However, right after the full moons of late September and October, moonrise happens only 25 to 40 minutes later on successive nights, as seen from the western slope. This is because the moon is moving farther north each night. This motion produces relatively early moonrise times on successive days. So for several nights after the full moons of early fall, there is no true darkness from sunset throughout the entire night. This early rising moon brightens the night sky for late harvesters, hunters, and this year for Halloween trick-or-treaters. The terms harvest moon and hunter's moon originated in Europe, and they are celebrated both in Europe and in North America during and after the full moons of late September through early November. In the southern hemisphere, the harvest moon and the hunter's moon occur during the austral autumn from late March to early May. You've been listening to Western Slope Skies, produced by members of the Black Canyon Astronomical Society. I'm Art Trevina.
This concludes the morning newscast. For KVNF News, I'm Brian Cambria.